Hello and welcome to the Majlis, the weekly podcast by Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, focusing on Central Asia. I am Mohammed Tahir, your host here in Washington, D.C. A couple of days ago, some 300 activists gathered in the center of Kyrgyz capital to protest against what they called the increasing number of Chinese migrant workers in Kyrgyzstan. They demanded authorities to deport illegal Chinese migrants back to their country and asked to stop granting citizenship to those who marry Kyrgyz nationals. Though we have been witnessing some level of resentment from the rest of the region, occasionally against China, but this has been one of the most direct demonstrations of growing concern about China's increasing influence in Central Asia. So the question is why some people in Central Asia are so bothered by China. What triggers their frustration, and as the authorities are trying to forge stronger ties with Beijing, where is this anti-China resentment is headed going forward? To discuss all these, I am joined by Rizkel Dishatka, Bishkek-based Kyrgyz journalist who keeps close eyes on this topic. Asal Betabarova, scholar from Kazakhstan, currently doing doctoral research at Japan's Hokkaido University. Bruce Panier, editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Central Asia blog, Kishlok Owazi. Welcome on board, colleagues.
Thank you.
Hey,
thank you for having us. Thank you for joining me. So let's start with the protesters, Rizkel, the protesters in Bishkek. Who are they and what they were up to?
Well, there were the media reports locally that they were organizers were a organization called 40 Nights. That is a deeply conservative right-wing group in Kyrgyzstan. They've been in political field for about 5-6 years now. And some reports are indicating that they are associated with the government, and government is supporting this group. So, in particular, I just want to give you a little background to this group. Initially, they were against the women's rights, particularly for reproductive rights and so forth, and travel restrictions on women. But besides that, they've been very, very aggressive on Chinese migration issue in Kyrgyzstan for, I believe, for about 4 or 5 years, because they were part of raids in on Chinese businesses in Kyrgyz Republic. And there are plenty of videos where they are participating on in these raids, and they are detaining Chinese citizens, obviously migrants in Kyrgyzstan, and they're checking their immigration status. And this is a huge problem in Kyrgyzstan for a number of years. And since last year, when reports out of Xinjiang started coming out on concentration camps in where they the Chinese authorities keep Uyghurs, ethnic Kazakhs and Kyrgyz and Hui Chinese. So since then, this issue of Chinese migration is becoming more and more political, and it's coinciding with the internal political dynamics here. So obviously it was expected that some from the local political groups will take advantage of this issue in terms of Chinese migrants and the migration. And we have to point it out that this is regarding illegal migration.
Yeah.
Because there's a discrepancy between the illegal migration numbers and the legal migration.
And on that point, Rizkel, this, you know, the illegal migration, what's the number that we know? And also the group was pointing at the Kyrgyz nationals marrying Chinese nationals. Do we have any number reflecting this situation?
Well, that's where the discrepancy is, because there hasn't been any research on exactly how many numbers of Chinese citizens marrying the Kyrgyz women or Kyrgyz citizens marrying Chinese women. Yeah. And, you know, most of it was pretty much anecdotal, you know, at this point, because there's no hard data on how many illegal Chinese are in the country. And this is sort of in the realm of rumors. And, and as you know, rumors are spreading pretty quick in this region.
Yeah.
And like I said, since last year, adding to the news from Xinjiang and the political situation there, it's becoming a hot topic here at the moment.
Yeah. We are keeping the situation in Xinjiang apart from discussion for a moment. Obviously, it's going to be part of this. But Asal, in Kazakhstan, you guys have gone through somewhat similar protests, perhaps a larger one a couple of years ago. So when you look into this from Kazakhstan, Kazakhstan. What do you see happening in Bishkek, in Kyrgyzstan? Anything relates to what Kazakhs were frustrated about when they came out to the streets protesting against China?
Well, yes, certainly we have similar factors triggering these settlements. And for example, we can have some similar resentment when, let's say, a sort of large-scale projects, Chinese investment are announced officially.
Yeah.
And there is sort of concern among the public that Chinese are coming. So these investments are followed by a big number of Chinese workers.
So
what happened back in 2016 in spring?
The question.
It was a sort of unprecedented in terms of scale.
I believe, Asel, you are referring to the protest involving the land reform, right?
Yes. So these attitudes, not very friendly towards China, maybe they always present, but sometimes they're not really visible or not really articulated. But these amendments in land legislation, they triggered these concerns, and, you know, it ended up in large-scale protests, what was sort of unique. It's not only the scale of the number, but the geography. It took place in several cities, so it was a sort of nationwide protest. And as we all know, well, the outcomes, the government had no choice but to have built a sort of dialogue platform with protesters. Well, it has shown that concern is there. But what was interesting, what sort of slogans or what sort of concerns these protesters did articulate. Again, it's migration from China. This is very common for many projects. But what was with the land project? I think there is a notion of land. So they were talking not only about migration, but protecting land.
Asel, apart from, you know, some recent gatherings and protests against situation in Xinjiang, but lately about the direct protest against Chinese influence in Kazakhstan, I have not seen anything lately there. So anything changed in this?
Yes, you are right. As I have mentioned in the beginning, although we have this sort of, you know, Sinophobia, so it's not really friendly towards Chinese and China. I mean, as kind of like, you know, public perception, but they're not always like vocal. So when the government announces big projects, so we have this kind of, you know, intensification of this kind of mood.
Okay. So Bruce, Asel and Rizkel, they both have mentioned the immigration aspects when it comes to how and why people are reacting against China in Central Asia, at least Kyrgyzstan and Kazakhstan. So going back to Kyrgyzstan for a moment. So what is really a problem here? Yeah, there are only, you know, 8,000 Chinese migrant workers, if you look into the government statistics. Yes, when you say Chinese nationals make up 80% of total foreign migrant workers, it sounds scary, but it's not really that big of a number. So the number cannot grow, that's another fact, because there is a quota as to how many migrant workers Kyrgyzstan can accept. What's that like, 14,500 people? So what is this all about?
Well, you know, there's a lot of bad publicity that's been connected with China, even recently, which doesn't even have that much to do with immigration. You know, and it's certainly in Kyrgyzstan, because you got to remember a lot of the people who are detained for corruption during the Atambayev administration are linked to like the thermal power plant project in Bishkek, which of course was a total fiasco. And there's been other projects too. And Rizkeldi certainly has done a great job of following some of the mining sites where this has also been a problem. But I think for some of the public in Kyrgyzstan, there's this perception that although their officials are corrupt, the Chinese are kind of feeding the corruption. Even though, you know, I mean, you can hardly blame the Chinese for handing over money, which is misused once it gets into Kyrgyzstan. But, you know, there is the perception that there wasn't these huge contracts coming in from China, you know, that certainly it would at least lower corruption, but it's become, you know, rampant in the last few years with these big, you know, I mean, the thermal power plant was $380 million, and by some accounts, $100 million of it ended up disappearing. You know, so they're hooked to that. That's part of the problem. There's another thing you got to remember, too, is that, you know, while China has been a neighbor of these regions for a long time. There was the Soviet factor, and even in the 1990s, you could have gone to Kyrgyzstan or Kazakhstan, and you would not have seen hardly any Chinese nationals at all. Still to that day, it was really only after the turn of the century that, you know, once China had started to sign all these projects, that a lot of were relative to what had been there before. A great many Chinese all of a sudden showed up in these border areas, Tajikistan, Kyrgyzstan, and Kazakhstan. So, you know, within easy living memory, people can recall when there were no Chinese at all. And I suppose, you know, relative to that, it probably looks like there's a lot of them now. And certainly the Chinese government includes them on every project that they sign in Central Asia. So, you know, that you could get the view that they are kind of everywhere because, for instance, China's involved in oil and gas projects in Western Kazakhstan. And so there are Chinese workers out there. And we know that China has an onshore contract with Turkmenistan, for instance. And so there are Chinese workers in Turkmenistan. They're not a lot, but there used to be none. And now you can find them in a lot of places, but certainly you can. The closer you get to the actual border of China, the more evident they are at bazaars, construction sites, things like that. So I think part of it is just the fact that people there are not accustomed to it. They've heard bad things about China. They're worried about this huge neighbor. And like I said, they just didn't used to have personal encounters with them until, you know, really the last 20 years.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you very much. I think you brought us to a good point. So either legitimate or otherwise, this is what some part of the society feels about China, and their frustration is growing. But on the other hand, China is the best friend when you listen to the authorities. So where is this all headed going forward? We will continue the discussion talking about this and many other aspects very shortly. First, let me recap the debate that today on the Majlis, Ready for Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia podcast. I'm joined by Rizkeldi Satka, Bishkek-based Kyrgyz journalist, Asal Beytabarova, doctoral researcher at the Japanese Hokkaido University. Asal is originally from Kazakhstan. Asal also just did a huge project on China in Central Asia in the context of Uyghur. And Bruce Panier, editor of Ready for Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia blog, Kishlok Awazi. And I'm Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis podcast here in Washington, DC, and we are discussing the perception of China in Central Asia. So, Bruce, just to continue where you ended, I've been reading your story from 2015 about increasing Chinese activities in Kyrgyzstan and some of the points that you were just referring to. I believe a lot has changed since then. So what are some of the visible signs of Chinese influence, the type of influence that people are furious about today?
Well, you know, for instance, I remember a few years back in Kazakhstan, there was a rumor that the Chinese workers were being paid more than local Kazakh workers. And that was enough to set off the local Kazakh workers, where they couldn't understand why they were doing exactly the same work, but the Chinese workers were getting paid more. And that, you know, this was just like word of mouth. It wasn't, no one had documents that could prove this is true. But that's all it took was, you know, these kind of rumors have come up in road construction projects in Tajikistan and in Kyrgyzstan. You know, were they really being paid more for the same work that they were doing? And then, of course, there's always management out there, too. And I've run into management of some Chinese project up in Karakul, way up in northern Kyrgyzstan. But, you know, I got to admit that they certainly behaved like they were the big shots of the whole region. They came into a restaurant.
You mean and Chinese?
Not speaking Kyrgyz, not speaking Russian, not speaking English, which the staff at the restaurant all spoke. And they were just furious that no one could take their order in Chinese. And they really made a scene, you know. And maybe all Chinese managers aren't like that. But they do kind of a bad rap for that. Rizkeldi might remember there was a textile plant in Kochkor, which is also up there by Issyk-Kul. But it was owned by the Chinese. And it got out in the media that it was kind of a sweatshop. They were making people work 14, 16 hours, sometimes wages were late being paid. And you had to wonder at how many plants in Kyrgyzstan that was probably true, but they were under Kyrgyz ownership. But the fact was that it was Chinese that they picked on. So this is the kind of publicity that they got out there. And I'm not saying that they didn't do anything wrong. Of course, they did. It's really strange how it changes when you see the view of China in Central Asia. When I was there in 2015 for the parliamentary elections and I was driving all around, I found Chinese construction road crews working in the south and in the north. And everyone in those areas right where the construction was going on thought the Chinese were great because, of course, they're offering jobs to the local population. Once the crew had moved on or the project had finished, then, you know, there was this huge disappointment that there was no longer any job from the Chinese. And then people tended to go, oh, you know, why are they here? What are they doing? Why do we need them? They're our friends, you know. So
definitely, I would like to take your points on some of the visible signs of Chinese influence. But also the other point is, Bruce, just to hit that aspect, is China doing anything which might be causing this reaction by the locals?
Well, I think it's a very complicated issue, and I would definitely love to research this topic a little more in detail, because there's none at the moment. Because I can explain why. 2 years ago, run up to the 2017 summit in Shanghai, I believe, of Belt and Road Summit, my colleague and I, we wrote a piece for South China Morning Post on corruption concerns in Kyrgyzstan, and specifically for its impact on Belt and Road. So, and back then, we wrote that it's becoming a serious issue, corruption, because the Chinese government is dealing government to government when it's projects in Central Asia, and Kyrgyzstan is in particular as well. And Bruce just mentioned those projects, the power plant, that's the biggest scandal of 2018. And at the moment, the Parliamentary Commission is investigating another project, which is a transmission project, which was done by the same Chinese company a few years ago. So that's another one that is, it's, the cost was around $389 million. It was done under former president, but it's also under investigation at the moment. So as you see, this is a big problem, and there's a legitimate concern that the China is exacerbating corruption in this country. It's aside from the migration issue, we have this concern that the Chinese officials, I mean, the China in general is influencing the politics now here. And I can give you an example from several years ago. There was a Canadian company, and it still is, called Stans Energy. So they had a mining license in Kyrgyzstan outside of Bishkek. And they claimed that one of the rare earth Chinese firms was behind the attack on this Canadian company, which resulted in the removal of the license, mining license. And they were accusing this Chinese company in influencing this attack on them. So it was quite a scandal. And I'm not sure what's the arbitration status at the moment, because they were suing the Kyrgyz government and they were trying to get the damage out of the Kyrgyz government. This is an example of how things are happening throughout the years here. And then the latest example of the protesting. And I think this is this just adds another level onto the growing concern of China's presence in this country.
That's a very interesting point that you mentioned, Rizkeldi. So let's go to Kazakhstan and discuss the Chinese activities from this perspective. Like Rizkeldi mentioned, a couple of things. It's just not only the migration that's causing concern in Kyrgyzstan. It also the level of corruption that China is involved in and their dictating influence on some of the local decisions that are made. So what type of activities that China is involved in Kazakhstan and the type of activities that causing concern in Kazakhstan, Asel?
Before answering you these questions, let me just make a very short comment on visibility of China in Kazakhstan.
Yeah.
In early 90s, between Kazakhstan and China, we had a sort of free movement, kind of visa-free regime. And because it was a kind of influx of Chinese citizens, not only Han Chinese, but for example, Uyghurs and others, it was basically like border trade. And sort of significant number of people, like for example, in Jharkhand, in bazaar, local bazaar in Almaty, and then two governments decided to introduce stricter regime. But overall, in regard of this visibility, it's not that, you know, physically visible. Of course, it depends on location, like big cities or construction sites. But, you know, like I live in Japan and virtually in all cities, there are so many Chinese tourists. And it's a sort of reality that there are many Chinese like coming, you know, buying stuff. I don't see that visibility in Central Asian countries. I think months ago, there is an anthropologist published a paper on Tajik Badakhshan. The Pamirs. And the argument, the idea of the paper was that although, you know, the China is just, you know, is present, you know, rumors and talk, but when you go there, there are little encounters. And especially maybe encounters or these exchanges, you know, between local population and Chinese. So it's a kind of China is there, but it's kind of absent. Yeah. So I think that was sort of very good observation, and it's very solid because the author has made, you know, field trip for several years.
Yeah.
And going back to your questions, yes, corruption practices on both sides. So when we talk about this, you know, about trust, whether population in Kazakhstan or Kyrgyzstan or Tajikistan or any Central Asian country, I think there is a problem with trust actually towards their own authorities.
What does that mean, really, Asal?
Corrupt practices. For example, when Chinese companies win large-scale bids,
yeah.
So the question is, was it fair bid, or maybe, mm-hmm. you know, it's not only in regard to Chinese companies, but mm-hmm. If there was a sort of, you know, factor of corruption.
Mm-hmm.
When we talk about China, it's very important to be in mind that there is no one united China. So there is diverse actors. And for example, Chinese companies, they compete with each other to, you know, to win these bids and to get projects. For example, now it is going on in Kyrgyzstan. Already for so many years, China, Kyrgyzstan, Uzbekistan are planning to build a railroad. And one engineer, I interviewed Chinese engineer in Kyrgyzstan, told that there is actually a hard competition between Chinese companies who will get this bid.
Mm-hmm. But at the end, the bid goes to the company which is approved by the Chinese government, right? Let me bring Bruce on here. So, Bruce, from whatever direction you look into this discussion, like the growing frustration is visible, either be it in Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, or Tajikistan even. We have seen a couple of farmers were angry about the Chinese labor force coming in, taking over farmlands there, and, you know, at least one gold mine is operated by China. So the frustration is there. So what is the future of this anti-China resentment going forward?
That is a good question. You know, one thing, I thought Estelle was making a very interesting point about the competition between Chinese companies for contracts in Central Asia, because that probably is going to be more a component of the future. You know, the Chinese have done almost all the major projects they're probably going to do in Central Asia, certainly for a while. And, you know, by that, I mean the railroads, the roads, the pipelines, all that kind of stuff is for the most part done. So we're not looking at any more, you know, multi-billion dollar contracts coming through from China anymore. And of course, those are the ones the government was really interested in because they directly benefited state coffers in the end, or certainly some energy needs or something of the country. They're going to be gone. So there's going to be less Chinese money, or at least visible Chinese money coming in, because they won't be building these projects. So you're going to end up with China's presence being mostly these companies probably competing against each other.
But
I don't see that there will be
but,
this
but
much.
Bruce, look into this from this perspective. Like, you know, China's, you know, spent lots of money in the past, but now the time comes when the Central Asian countries have to pay back for the debt that they have taken from China. And it's going to make the situation even complicated from Central Asian point of view.
Oh, undoubtedly. Undoubtedly. And I'm sure, I think, you know, certainly Kyrgyzstan and Tajikistan have been banking on the fact that China is going to write off some of this debt one day, the way that Russia has for years, and actually the way that China is doing in other countries in Africa and even South America now.
Hmm.
I think that in Bishkek and Dushanbe, they're sure that one day, for political reasons, reasons of, you know, good diplomatic relations, the Chinese will just say, we're going to write off half or three quarters of this debt. With the countries that are a little bit more affluent, Kazakhstan or even Turkmenistan, and I know that sounds strange, but the fact is Turkmenistan does have natural gas.
Yeah.
I think the Chinese would be less lenient on them for any money they owe, because they'll know that there's a way they can get it. So I don't see that changing at all. But like I said, we'll see if the Chinese are the amount of money that Tajikistan or Kyrgyzstan owes China is, in Beijing's eyes, you know, peanuts, really not very much at all. It's a huge amount of money for Tajikistan and Kyrgyzstan. It's almost nothing for China. You know, what's happening in Xinjiang now is just another piece of this anti-Chinese sentiment that's been brewing really for the last 10 or 15 years. I think it's just another sign of the, you know, the direction that this relationship is headed in as far as the people are concerned.
Yeah. Rizkel, how do you see the future of this resentment? And also, you know, people are furious, authorities, especially in authorities authorities in Kyrgyzstan and Tajikistan, as just Bruce mentioned, is totally in debt to China, and soon huge portion of their country's GDPs will be used to repay the Chinese debt. Then what?
Well, that's the big one. And the problem is that I can't see how the Kyrgyz government will be fixing some of these conflicts. And I want to give you very specific. These mining conflicts, how are you going to fix those conflicts when you have local people protesting against the projects that the government is putting there in the first place without consulting those local people? How it ended last time we saw it, it was the Chinese project, investor-funded project, which was completely destroyed last year. So that's just one of those examples. And you have already more than a few of them in this country right now. They're brewing as we speak, and they haven't been resolved yet. So that's just one side of it. Another side of it is the debt that you raised. So in Kyrgyzstan, it's 40%, and the country is extremely poor.
Yeah.
And they don't have money. They can't sufficiently provide funds for the health care or for education. And there's always this issue of unemployment in this country. And on top of everything else, you have the raging corruption in this country, which is, I think, it's the biggest concern. So. And compounded with the level of trust, which the Kyrgyz government is not really enjoying much, you know, in the public's view. I'm kind of skeptical that the China will be able to improve its image if it keeps going this way, like as it is doing now, especially with the camps in Xinjiang. Because Kyrgyzstan is one of those countries in this region where protesting is allowed, and people have been doing this for the last two decades. I'm not sure they will keep quiet if something happens, especially when you bring into a mix a nationalist groups like 40 Knights, for instance. So it's a big question, and to be honest with you, I'm quite skeptical that China will be able to improve its image unless it does something really, really dramatic, which I'm not sure of, given that the government here is not capable of fixing its own affairs, especially economy, and let alone corruption.
There's already some level of xenophobia involving many different aspects of the life, but you also said, Rizkeldi, that China is becoming somewhat politically active in your country. Also, you know, the question raises in my mind is China also becoming polarized topic in Central Asia. Is there any chance that China itself becoming a political issue, like some nationalistic parties emerging with the slogan of anti-China sentiment? Do you see China becoming itself a political issue in Kyrgyzstan, and how that could end up?
Well, I think you have a point here, because if you remember about 5 years ago, there was an incident on Chinese-Kyrgyz border when I think more than 10 or 11 Uyghur Xinjiang natives were crossing the border, and they were killed in the end. It was around January 2014. So that was, and then I wrote a piece for the Diplomat, and I was specifically calling this incident as a spillover effect from Xinjiang into Kyrgyzstan. And by essence, we can talk about Central Asia as a whole, of course. And then you had this bombing of the Chinese embassy in Bishkek. So, and after that, you have this issue of the concentration camps in Xinjiang. So I think China is becoming an issue, it's for sure. Now, what's the impact? I think we have to see how it works out. But so far, as we see, it's becoming a very controversial political issue. And China is not doing well to help out the local governments here. Because by creating these issues in the first place, and I'm talking about the Xinjiang right now, it is China putting itself into a very, very hot spot here in Kyrgyzstan. And I don't know about Kazakhstan, how it will work out there. But as we see the media, and especially the coverage of the camps and everything that is related to negative complications out of it, we can see that it is already creating a lot of buzz in this region. Kyrgyzstan is becoming a very, very, I think it's becoming like an indicator of how people are reacting to China at the moment.
Yeah. What about the situation in Kazakhstan, Asal? Do you see China itself becoming a liability of some sort, or becoming a material for domestic politics of some sort?
If already it has been mentioned that political situation, domestic politics are different, and Kyrgyzstan is an exceptional case. And, you know, in Kazakhstan, state-run media and this kind of official discourse, it has much more power and sources, try to dominate, society or other discourses. So about Xinjiang, we have different situation about this outgoing situation in Xinjiang and how it is being discussed. So we don't have these meetings or protests. Of course, it doesn't mean that society is absolutely silent, but it's rather a different way to try to deal with this very sensitive issue. And if you all know the official stance that was expressed several times, Xinjiang is internal affairs, and we do not interfere in China's internal politics. But if you pay attention to how grassroots movements are trying to, reach not only domestic audience, but it's, we can say, global audience, especially this attached human rights. Mm. So now this grassroots movement, maybe we can say that it has become a source of information that has importance, not only for Kazakhstani society, but for the world, society.
Yeah.
When we look closer at its activities, we can see how their practices, their strategies have been evolved. So they've got much more experience, how to record, collect, gather solid proofs, evidences, and how to reach out the global audiences. Very frequently they are visited by Western media, by, and they have this strategy to reach out different languages. So different parts of the world. It's not only English, French, or German, for example. What is interesting in this situation, if the government is against of this kind of activity, it has all the power, all the tools to stop it. So it's not really supporting the sort of grassroots movements officially, openly, but it is not really trying to stop it.
Yeah.
I'm closely following all these developments and the future of these grassroots movements.
Yeah.
Of course, we don't know how long the situation in Xinjiang will continue, but particularly what sort of response or how this Kazakhstani government stance will change, with time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we are also following the future of that grassroots movement very closely. So, Bruce, keeping that kind of grassroots movements in mind, be it in Kazakhstan, in Kyrgyzstan, the way that China become a kind of polarized topic of discussion there, so how much of the factor this frustration or the anger of people might play in shaping the future of China-Central Asia relationships going forward?
This is a big problem because, clearly China is facing a public relations crisis in Central Asia at the moment. I mean, it's there's more anti-Chinese sentiment than there has been in the past. That's going to be bad. So the government's in a bad position, certainly. Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, Tajikistan, they all border China. We all know, China's a huge country. They're getting lots of investment from China. At the same time, it's a balancing act. Mm. First thing in the world for these governments would be if their own people saw them as being more interested in being friends with China than they were in promoting the interests of the citizens of the countries.
Yeah.
So this is always going to be a problem, and I don't know at this moment what China would have to launch a major charm offensive, and I can't even imagine what that would involve to convince a lot of people in Central Asia that they weren't using Central Asia for resources or thinking about taking part of the land. And let's face it, the Central Asian governments have all given, the ones that border China, have all given land to China since they became independent. So there's a lot of issues there that need to be diffused before China's image among many people is going to be improved.
Yeah, thanks, Bruce. I feel, Rizkeldi, you seem to have something to build on Bruce's future-facing commentary on China and Central Asia. Please quickly, so that we wrap up the discussion here. I know it's been such an interesting discussion, so it's so tempting to keep it going on. But,
Well, We're going to have to see what happens. Mm-hmm. But to see what it might look like, I think it will be a good task to go over to Mongolia and see how Mongolians are dealing with the Chinese expansion, because it's on another level there. And they've been dealing with this for some time. And
what do you mean when you say the other level? I mean, what examples?
Well, they have their own political issues regarding the Dalai Lama. Uh-huh. If you remember, Dalai Lama was visiting Ulaanbaatar.
Yeah.
I believe it was a couple of years ago.
Uh-huh.
And because of the issues with Tibet and Chinese policy towards Tibet and the Dalai Lama specifically, Mongolia ignored the China's call, and then they invited Dalai Lama. And, you know, they are Buddhists in Mongolia. So they just decided that that's their business, not China's business, you know, how they want to deal with Dalai Lama. But aside from that, anti-Chinese sentiment in Mongolia is, in my impression, was in Ulaanbaatar, was every time I spoke to someone on this issue, I think it was very, very delicate and a very hot topic in Mongolia, because they have some of these nationalist groups. They have the Nazi flags, you know, with the insignia and the, you know, everything that was taken from the, you know, from the Nazi period, and they were, you know, waving those flags and you know, rolling around the city, and then were promoting this anti-Chinese sentiment. And it's, I think there's plenty of documentaries and reports from Mongolia. It's not to say that it's huge and widespread, but it's there. And this is why I think, you know, when you ask me about what it might happen in the future with, you know, regarding the Chinese presence in Central Asia, I think the Mongolia would be a one way to look at it, and it's just a part of it.
Wow.
Yes.
That's very striking point.
If I can add to this, I think it makes sense, especially to compare with Kyrgyzstan, because Mongolia more or less, I know, has, well, let's say, more free society, and they can use the China factor as a kind of tool in domestic politics, which is not really, you know, the case for Kazakhstan or Tajikistan, right? So when they have this kind of competitive elections, and so the China factor can be used as a tool.
As the election tool,
It's just, you know, for domestic politics.
Yeah, it's a huge topic. Thank you very much, Bruce Fanier, editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia blog, Kishlak Uwazi. Also, big thanks goes to Reskel Disatka, Bishkek-based Kyrgyz journalist, and Asal Beytabarova, doctoral student at the Japanese Hokkaido University. Thank you very much, colleagues, for your time and thoughts today.
Thank you.
And this is it from me, Mohammed Tahir, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's media manager for South and Central Asia, based in Washington, D.C. Until next week, bye-bye.